On this edition of Unplugged, we are going to check in with a man who's, I guess, unfortunately in a club that's reasonably large. That is, players that have played in a grand final for St Kilda but won a premiership with someone else. There are a few that are in that boat. One of his teammates in that era, Luke Ball, was another one. But, of course, Ben McAvoy involved in the Shane Savage trade initially at the end of 2013. Played 91 games with the Saints, having been recruited from the Murray Bush Rangers, debuted in 2008. Went on to play another 161 with Hawthorn, including the second and third of their three-peats in 2014 and 15. Also captained the Hawks up until his retirement in 2022. Ben McAvoy, thank you very much for joining us.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
Now, obviously, coming to the club at a pretty good time, and obviously there's a little bit of history repeating. Ross Lyon was the coach at the time. He's obviously circled back around, and he's at St Kilda again now, leading them into a finals campaign. But can you take us through to the start? Obviously, a lad growing up in the country and ending up at Moorabbin.
Yeah. Gosh, it seems a couple of lifetimes ago now. But, so it was end of 2007. I was at 2007 draft. So, straight out of high school. It was only a bit over a week after my last year 12 exam, I think. And fortunate enough to get picked up by the Saints and packed all my worldly possessions into Mum's little Toyota Echo and drove 4 hours down the Hume and out to Moorabbin. And that would be my next 6 years.
Yeah, Ben, I have to ask because it's my inclination is to call you Big Boy. So I have to ask about the nickname. Do you like it? Do you hate it? What do you think?
No, it's all good. Like, I was a little reserved in the beginning. I didn't think it was that cool, but once I established how much people actually loved it, kind of just rolled with it. And I don't know, it wasn't something that actually took off until I left St Kilda. When I got to Hawthorn, it really just kind of, it grew legs. Even coaches, teammates, supporters, everyone sort of started calling me in. So I think it's stuck for life in footy circles now.
So, at that beginning there, who did you kind of, I guess, gravitate to when you move into club? I mean, you had two senior experienced ruckmen in Gardner and King there, and who sort of took you under the wing, and who did you gravitate towards more?
Both of those guys were very generous with their time with me and trying to sort of assist me to find my way in the game, which I probably didn't really in my time at St Kilda. I played some good footy in the later times, but I really struggled early on. But both of those guys were really big supports. I'm ever grateful to them. There was a lot of guys, really. Some of the country guys that looked after me, Cozzy, I think you've had on here, and I actually got drafted with Fraser Garrick because he retired and then came back, and so we had some history because my old man taught him at school, and so I remember him taking me aside for some one-on-one boxing lessons and things like that. So look, there was lots of guys that went out of their way to look after a young fella a bit lost from the bush.
Ben, I want to ask you about a little story I heard a little while back, and that was that your mum thought or was hoping that the footy club might have had a horse around so that you could clear your mind and have a little bit of a ride on game days. Is that the truth?
It would be. I probably can't actually verify that. I think I have heard that before, but certainly, mum was concerned about the farm boy going down to the bush It's because that was something that I used to do when I was playing Murray Bush Rangers and we lived on the farm. I'd often get up and go for a ride in the morning. It was one of my favourite things to do and get out in the bush or even doing some work on the farm. That sounds true enough to me.
So first season, you get your one game, your debut game in that season. We think we were racking our minds before going, I think that was the game where Ross dropped Milne and Del Santo and a couple of others just for disciplinary reasons, yep, or form or just trying to send a message. Did it come, yep, a bit of a surprise? You went, oh, I've been selected this week. And how did the selection process come up? Did you basically just welcome go, you're playing, or how'd that happen?
I can't remember exactly, but I feel like it could have been in the paper early in the week. Like it was, as you say, it was one of those send a message type of week. So I was 100% gifted that game, just because the guys performed poorly in Sydney the week before, and it was myself, Robert Eddy, and Jared Allen all debuted. And I reckon it was, I could be wrong, but I feel like maybe Ross called it in a you know, a press conference or something early in the week, just saying, yeah, there'll be changes. And because I was the highest draft pick from the year before, saying I'd be debuting, I think. I'm happy to be corrected on that. But so, yeah, certainly a surprise in that regard, because I wouldn't have said that my form warranted it. It was just, as you say, it was a sending a message week. And look, it worked, because our form for the rest of that year was unbelievable. I think we went from maybe 5-7, I think we might have been. I debuted in round 13, and we stormed home to finish fourth and end up in a prelim final.
Now, one of your touches from that debut game has made the highlight reels. Might have been one of your first ones, but a little bit of a bullet from Clint Jones. Might have been his most accurate kick of his career. Hit you right between the eyes. Went through the hands, but what do you remember of that moment?
I thought it was actually Luke Ball that kicked it. I should know. I've been showed the replay enough. And that was my first touch. Not one of it was my first touch. Well, yeah, look, I don't know, that's all a bit of a blur. My recollection is all about the push in the back from Dean Solomon that created the disaster. But, of course, I don't normally bother bringing that up because no one really believes it. But, yeah, I did get the free kick because I sure as hell didn't mark it. And then joined a unique club that hit the post with that first kick. And, not my best moment, but certainly one of the enduring ones that I've had.
Looking at, obviously the next little period. So obviously you played that game that year, 2009, you played a few games, particularly late in the season. What was it like watching him go on that run? Obviously King and Gardner playing very well over the course of the season and not quite being there, but being on the fringe in September?
That was okay. That was just a great learning experience for me because, again, I think I played 11 games for the year and at least 10 of them would have been gifted again. I only got games through injury or suspension to Kingy or a big show. And I was really not up to AFL standard at that point. I was just, I suppose, lucky to be given the exposure. And to go, get to watch those guys going through a final series and being involved in training and things like that was very valuable for me.
Well, I mean, you say the games were gifted, but if you go back through to records, the two games you missed at the end of the year, the two games we lost. So you could say that you probably were taking a bit of form into the team. So it's, not exactly, I'd say, a gifted, but, you played in 11 matches that year for 11 wins. So, it was pretty good form.
I think that might have been coincidence because it got higher than that. I can't remember how many, it was 15 or 16, maybe even 17 wins that I played in before a loss. So, but I would say that I might have been a lucky charm and not much more.
What was the reaction when you finally lost that first game the next year in 2010? How did you feel? Because you would have just been expecting to keep winning.
I don't really remember, to be honest. So 100% I would have been taking it for granted because I can't remember who that first loss was. But I only know that stat because someone's repeated it back to me at some point. But it was certainly a fantastic time to be around a footy club. It makes a huge difference to you, your day to day and from week to week when you're putting wins on the board. Especially through 2009, the team played some unbelievable football. We're clearly the best team for the year. And I always just blamed Hawthorn for stealing that one off Geelong in 2008. And having them come back to us for the vengeance.
Now, fast forwarding to 2010, obviously a bit of a whirlwind final series. You played well through the finals, particularly in that prelim. You feel the pain of being left out of a grand final. You then sit in the stands and watch Michael Gardner do a hammy, thinking, geez, the 1 week we don't roll with two, that happens. But when the game was a draw, I imagine you would have felt immediately that, well, I'm playing next week. That's surely a given. So what was it like, I guess, going through getting dropped, seeing Gardner go down, and then obviously the experience of the draw and knowing that you were going to be there the following week?
Yeah, look, that was an enormous emotional roller coaster for me. As you say, I played reasonably well, you know, by my standards at that time, I suppose. I'd played most games for the year. And yeah, so I got the unfortunate tap on the shoulder on Thursday night, and you know, they made a ballsy call, which you know, good on them for trying that. And even funnily enough, watching the game with Gutty going out injured, it nearly worked in our favour, because we had to switch things around, and you know, the second half of that game was unbelievable. So, but then when it got to the end of the game, to be honest, I wasn't playing, but I would say I felt nearly as much disappointment as everyone who was on the ground. And it was, I'm not sure what the word would be, but it wasn't straight away. I thought, well, yeah, there's going to be a replay, and that's probably going to mean I'm a fair chance to play. But it wasn't something that I wanted at that point, because I'd kind of had my chance. I'd missed out. The guys had just given so much on the ground that day, and the grand final had been played, if you like. So it wasn't, dread is too strong a word, but it was just like, well, no, this can't be happening. I don't really, you know, want it to happen this way. I just wanted the guys to win. So then to try and wrap my head around that and to try and get myself back into sort of performance mode was really challenging. And I think, everyone, in hindsight, everyone struggled that week. We did the best we could, but, you know, we played our grand final. The effort that they put in that second half to come back and nearly snatch it, everyone was pretty exhausted, I think.
You mentioned when Gardy went down that potentially worked in our favour in that first game. Do you remember much of the discussion during the week, I guess, in the lead up to selection for the next game, about whether they'd stick with Cozzy in the ruck or bring you in? Was there much discussion internally around what that would look like?
Well, I'm sure there would have been, but well, maybe not on that point, because I'm pretty sure that in the post game meeting after that draw, or it might have been the first meeting early in the week, Ross said that I'd be playing. So I don't know whether he would have just been wanting to, you know, put a young player's mind at ease and try and, you know, remove some of the nervous energy, which you know, which sort of saps you. But so it was, yeah, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was early in the week that I found out. So, you know, what the coaches talked about behind closed doors, I'm not sure. But, yeah, I certainly knew early in the week that I'd be playing in that replay.
So what was Ross's, I guess, message after the game? Did he give you any personal messages yourself, or did he just address everyone as a whole? What did he, I guess, after the ever dust settled, what did he say to everyone?
That's after the draw, you mean?
After the actual grand final result.
I don't think I can remember, to be honest. Knowing Ross, it would have been just about you know, buttering up and improving and coming back again. The only part I remember is a snipe at me about needing to get stronger. Which was valid and fair enough, but probably not what I wanted to hear right at that time. But I can't remember the exact content of that meeting after that game.
Now, that was obviously St Kilda's most famous draw that year in the grand final, but they did play another one about 8 weeks earlier, and you kicked what was really a slow motion goal from a ruck contest at about 10 seconds to go that just sort of dribbled around the post. You kind of got an unopposed run at the ruck contest on the edge of the goal square. Can you kind of take us through that against your future club in Hawthorn?
I don't remember that too well either. It was one of those just sort of instinct things. It was in the days when there was still third man up, so we had multiple ruckmen at the contest, and you know, everyone just got a bit confused about who was doing what, and I just sensed an opportunity and, as you say, wobbled one through. But probably the more pertinent part of that story is, my future teammates, once I got to Hawthorn, and them regularly complaining to me about the spray that they got after that game because of me, because they should have won that game, and we felt like we'd snatched a draw from the victory, from defeat. So, that they well remembered the spray that they got after that game, and it reminded me about that regularly.
You mentioned at the end of 2010 how you got the call from Ross to get stronger and fitter and all that sort of stuff, and quite clearly you did that over the off season, because into 2011 you pretty much became the number one ruck, and I think you played every game that year, or just about every game, including that final loss to Sydney. But what was obviously Ross left after that game. What do you remember about that period, I guess, in between the Sydney final loss and then Ross's departure?
Goodness, not a lot, to be honest. I couldn't even tell you exactly when that happened. My MO at the end of the season was always to just, as soon as physically possible, to get out of Melbourne and head to the bush basically avoid all forms of communication. I'd just go bush for a couple of months. So, I remember it being a big shock. But, you know, once that sort of, you know, media storm was over for a couple of days, you just kind of just get on with business. I don't remember a lot significant from that time, to be honest.
I'm wrong here, but I believe you lived down at Mount Martha at the time. You were living at the playing at the club for a fair bit of it. Yeah, so I was going to mention the whole move down to Seaford. I guess you probably were one of the only few that thought, "Hey, this isn't too bad." Actually, the shorter drive there and that sort of thing. How was the whole transition for in your eyes?
Unfortunately, it was very poorly handled at the time. So, I embraced it. I think when we moved down there, I was still living in Brighton, so it was a 45-minute trip. But as I've said, I wasn't a fan of the city, so bought a house down there a bit away from the hustle and bustle, and sort of just embraced the opportunity to be out in a bit more space. But I was probably about the only one, I think. And it was, it was just really poorly handled in terms of, Moorabbin was St Kilda heartland. All the guys lived around there. The way that our program was structured, there was dozens of cafes, within a few minutes drive that we'd frequent, during our lunch breaks and things like that. And then a couple of things happened. One was that when the facility, and this might be memory of it anyway, when the facility was first designed, it only had the football department moving down there, and the business side of it was going to stay in Moorabbin, but then partway through that changed. And so when we got there, even though it was a brand new facility, it was barely up to scratch really, because we were crammed in too small a space. And then it just wasn't really, or didn't seem to be, considered the cultural shift that would be, that you're away from everything. There's no, as a young player, I had, all the guys like Lenny Hayes and Cozzy and X Clark, and they just grab you and take you for lunch somewhere at a cafe and just sort of show you around and things like that. And culture, it was a big shift, and that wasn't sort of foreseen, and it wasn't handled well by the players. There's a little bit of just like, we'll just suck it up and get on with it. It could have been done a lot better, unfortunately.
How did you find the transition to Scott Waters as well? You actually played some pretty good footy 2012 and 13. You were actually getting spoken about, I remember at the time, as a potential future captain. Obviously, you ended up moving to Hawthorn at the end of 2013. But how did you find Scott Waters in terms of your game and I guess the change that brought post-Ross?
It probably freed me up a little bit, opportunity under a new coach. Ross was a was a great coach. I had and still have a lot of respect for him, but I've said many times that I didn't handle him well as a young player. You know, I was very naive and and immature in a football sense. I was mature off the field, but very immature in a football sense. And so, you know, Ross was hard and you know, driving me because he knew what I was capable of. But I just, you know, sort of wasn't ready, if you like. And so going to a new coach, I think that released the shackles a little bit, at least for a while. And so, you know, yeah, it was good initially, but then, you know, as we all know, things sort of fell apart by the end of 2013. And I remember that being a really challenging period towards the end of that season, you know, going out to Seaford. You know, it was just, you know, losses mounting. That it was just a really challenging period all around.
Darren mentioned that you were at that point being spoken about as a leader, as a future captain. You're obviously getting close to the end of Nick Riewoldt's career. Was it a shock to you? I mean, I think the story is you were away, you were overseas when you got the call to say that you'd been traded. Was that a shock to you, or did you have any inkling that that was on the cards? Like, how did that go down?
Yeah, no, a complete shock. So, yeah, you were right. I was on holidays in Thailand, and I was contracted for 2 years, had not given a moment's thought to go elsewhere because, you know, I'd signed a contract, so that was a commitment, and I'd see that through. So I hadn't given it one second's thought. And as challenging as the end of that 2013 season was, you know, as soon as the season ends, I'm out of Melbourne and just forgetting about everything for a few months. So, that was like firstly an email from my manager say, better turn your phone on, and then a 4 a.m. phone call. And that was the first I knew of it, but the deal was all already agreed to. And if I said yes, it was done. I obviously had the option of saying no because I was contracted, but it was a bit of a no brainer, to be honest, because, you know, we're having our challenges, and as much as I hadn't thought about it, you know, it was twice as long a contract, and the reigning premiers were asking me to come play for them, and my club was willing to let me go. And so, it was a massive shock, but at the same time, pretty easy to say yes to, and pretty glad I did because it worked out very well.
So you've gone from playing under Ross to going over and playing under Clarko. They're probably two of the called, I guess, some of the better coaches of this period of time that we're seeing at the moment. What's something you would say was probably they're extremely different with, and is there any kind of similarity you found between the two of them at all?
Yeah, I think they were quite similar in that they were both great coaches of team and team ethos, and there wasn't that they were just very good at getting everyone sort of on the same page and ready for the same playbook, if you like. Clarko had a natural ability to encourage guys to use their flair. So Ross was, in my memory anyway, you know, we had some outstanding players, but the thing that made us great at that time was guys being so disciplined to their role, whereas there was a little more freedom under Clarko to, use rough guidelines and make sure you bring your strengths to the table. But look, yeah, every coach is different, but I suppose in hindsight they were both similar, and I had an enormous amount of respect for both of them.
And obviously a tremendously successful move for you with premierships in 2014 and 15, and I guess avenging that experience of 2010. You did mention the desire to get back to the country wherever possible, and can certainly sympathise with that as somebody who grew up in regional Victoria as well. But what does life entail these days? Obviously, you're only a year out of the AFL system, having finished up at Hawthorn at the end of last year. Was it straight back to regional life, and what are you up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was straight back to the farm. From the day after I finished, I've been a full-time farmer. So I first bought the farm just over 10 years ago. So I'd been sort of building that up, I suppose, to be ready to transition into post-football life. And so, yeah, just going on 12 months now, full-time. I'm out in the Wimmera region near Stawell, in Western Victoria. And so, yeah, me and my family, got a wife and four kids here, and yeah, it's been a busy 12 months.
A bit of a lighthearted one to finish for me, Ben, but you've got to pick one. Are you picking for your new football franchise, Prime Luke Hodge or Prime Nick Riewoldt? I think we did actually ask Shane Savage this, the same question.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go with Hodgie. I got along so well with both of them, but Hodgie's got the runs on the board, premierships. He was not that Rui wasn't, but Hodgie was one of those unique guys who could just draw something out of other people around them. Rui was the best I ever saw at drawing things out of himself and pulling the performance from nowhere when we had no right to physically, but Hodgie was one of those innate leaders that would just have an impact on people around him all the time.
And to finish it off, the question we've asked everyone this year, but it's the 150th year of the club. For you yourself, basically, what is the St Kilda Football Club to you? Is there a moment there? Is there just a word that describes it? Is there something that you've taken from the club and just thought, yeah, that's what it means to me?
Look, I mean, for me personally, if I had to pick a word, it'd probably be opportunity. Because St Kilda was the club that gave me my first opportunity at AFL level. They didn't have to pick me, but they did. And so I'm forever grateful for that. John Peake and John Beveridge, the recruiters who picked my name out. So, like I said at the start, it seems like two lifetimes ago that I was at St Kilda. Forever grateful for the opportunity to step into the AFL world and meet some of the fabulous people that I did.
Ben, appreciate you jumping on with us. Terrific servant of the club, had a wonderful career across two clubs. You're very nearly a premiership player at the Saints and the Hawks, and obviously we very much wished that was the case with 2010. But good luck with everything going forward, and we appreciate you jumping on with us this week.
No worries, guys. Appreciate it. Keep up the great work.